We're getting toward the end of our study of the book of Ecclesiastes. Chapters 11 and 12 really form the end or the conclusion, I think, of the book. I was trying to think of a title for this section of the book of Ecclesiastes. And what I came up with is not original. I wish it was original with me, but it's the title of a book written by Francis Schaeffer called How Should We Then Live? Francis Schaeffer, interesting person, lived an interesting life, and a very intriguing author. I've read several of Schaeffer's books in years gone by. As a matter of fact, it's been a number of years, but looking back, I have some of Schaeffer's books on my list to read again. Schaeffer, back in the 60s and 70s, I think anticipated the effect of postmodernism on the thinking of religious people, and he anticipated and saw that a long time before most people did, and so he wrote about it and he talked about it in books like The God Who Is There or Escape from Reason. There's several books that he wrote that are interesting. He is there and he is not silent is a book that he wrote defending the Bible and defending the inspiration of the Bible. And then one of my favorite Schaeffer books was Whatever Happened to the Human Race. Again, Schaeffer anticipated so much that we've seen come to fruition as a result of postmodern thinking. I don't remember that Schaeffer references the book of Ecclesiastes, but I think that Schaeffer does pretty much exactly what the preacher does in the book of Ecclesiastes. He anticipates that the question is going to be raised, what do we do? How do we live? We've been in our study of the book of Ecclesiastes noting that the preacher examines life. He looks for answers to important questions like what is the meaning of life? And he searches for those things under the sun, and he paints a picture that is not a very attractive picture. If you're trying to find happiness, if you're trying to find contentment, if you're trying to find peace of mind, just from the perspective of life in this world, you're going to be gravely disappointed. You're going to be sad. The picture that the preacher paints from the perspective of life under the sun is this. We're born, we live and struggle through life, and we die. I mean, that's the picture. And again, from the standpoint of just under the sun, that is pretty bleak. But we've seen hints throughout the book of Ecclesiastes that the preacher believes there's something more than just life under the sun. He's been pointing us toward the conclusions that he's going to draw in chapters 11 and 12. And so one commentator suggested that if we look at the book of Ecclesiastes like a sermon, which I think is really a good way to examine the book of Ecclesiastes, it is he calls himself the preacher. He is preaching. If you look at the book of Ecclesiastes as a sermon, then what we generally call the invitation is chapters 11 and 12. And what the invitation is intended to do is what I've heard on a number of occasions Brother D. Bowman call storming the will. That's the purpose of the invitation, is to storm the will. Challenge people to make practical application. Challenge people to do something. So what are we going to do with our lives under the sun? How are we going to live our lives under the sun? How should we then live? I think that's the theme of chapters 11 and 12. And what I want to do is I want to break this down into several different lessons. The first one being verses 1 through 8 of Ecclesiastes chapter 11, the text that we've just read together. One of the things I've noticed in Bible classes in the book of Ecclesiastes down through the years is this section of the book, really starting in chapter 6, going all the way through chapter 11, the end of chapter 11, is that more often than not, we look at things, we look at these statements, we look at these sentences. Some of them are proverbs, some of them are just sayings of another kind. We look at them and we pull them out of context and, okay, now what does that mean? What does that say to us? Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 1 is a good example of that, I think. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Well, that's interesting. Now, that sounds intriguing. And what does that mean? And what does that mean to us? And what is the application that we make? What I've decided in my study of the book of Ecclesiastes is that that was not the intention of the preacher. The intention of the preacher was not just to collect a series of random proverbs. And, okay, you read this verse, and, okay, it means this, and now we set that aside, and we go on and we read the next sentence. Okay, and this means this, and we go on and set that aside. Really, the book of Proverbs essentially does that. Proverbs is a collection of proverbial sayings, and sometimes from sentence to sentence, the meaning completely and totally changes. But I think that's not so in the book of Ecclesiastes. I think that the preacher is drawing some very important conclusions. If we're going to look at life just from the perspective of under the sun, it is incredibly depressing. And what is even the point of living if we can't find some happiness, some contentment, some peace under the sun? So how should we then live? What I want to do is I want to look at these eight verses with you briefly this morning and suggest that the preacher has a theme. And he has a theme for those who he is admonishing to put God first in their lives. But how are we going to make the best of our lives under the sun? And I would suggest to you that the first thing the preacher says to us is just get busy and do what's right. Get busy and do what's right. Starting in verse 1, again, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. What does he mean by that? I would suggest to you, and one commentator in talking about this section says that what he's admonishing us to do is to take risks. If we look at the book of Ecclesiastes up to this point and we think it's all gloom and it's all dark and what's the point, it might be very challenging and very tempting to think, well, there's just really not anything that we can do. There's not any purpose in life. And so the preacher says to us, get out and do something. Cast your bread upon the waters. Some think that this has reference to charitable work. And I've heard lessons where Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 1 makes that application, is that you need to spread your benevolence, spread your wealth, spread the blessings that God has provided for you. I actually read some, and I don't remember exactly where it was, but I read something one time that suggested that this is a business model. And maybe it is a business model. Maybe it does have some reference to business in some way or another. But considering that life under the sun is vanity, he says, get out and get busy. Do something. Take risks. It's tempting to apply, and this will be true with each one of the things we say here, it's tempting to make an application to sharing the gospel or spreading the gospel. Get out and do something. But don't just sit and do nothing, is the point that he's making. Get out and do something. And then he says in verse 2, give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you know not what disaster may happen upon the earth. In the field of economics, I'm told, this is known as diversification. I've heard that word before. I think I understand the concept of diversification. I definitely understand the proverb that says, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Have you ever heard that before? I mean, it looks like maybe some of you haven't heard that expression before. But okay, how are we going to live life under the sun? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Remember, even if you're brave enough to get up off the chair, get out of the house and go do something. Go do something. Cast your bread upon the water. Who knows what will happen when you just get out and do something, doing what is right. But don't put all your eggs in one basket. Give a portion to 7 or even 8. This, by the way, verse 2 is why some people think benevolence is what's under consideration here in verse 1 when he said, cast your bread upon the waters. Again, maybe that's the idea, or maybe that's an idea, but I don't think that that's all that the preacher is saying. Just get up and get out and do something. Do lots of things. Don't limit yourself to just one thing. Give a portion to seven or even to eight. For you know not what disaster may happen on the earth. And then in verses 3, 4, and 5, and actually I should have put verse 6 on the screen, but I would have had to have made the type too small. I think it's probably a little bit small as it is. But in verses 3, 4, and 5, don't try to anticipate the future. You know, don't try to anticipate the future. Some people get so caught up in worrying about the future. Well, what's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen next week? What's going to happen next month? What's going to happen next year? What's going to happen in the future? They get so caught up in trying to anticipate the future that they miss something extremely important. And so the preacher says, first of all, he says, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Some things are predictable. Some things you can count on. If the clouds are full of rain, they're going to eventually empty themselves on the earth. If a tree falls, it's going to lie where it falls, right? Right, some things are predictable, but there's some things we can't know. And some things we can't anticipate. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Why is it that some people will just sit and do nothing? What about the farmer? And that seems to be the illustration that the preacher's using here. The farmer who says, I'm not going to sow my seed until the weather is exactly perfect. I'm not going to sow my seed. I'm going to wait till the clouds, there aren't any clouds in the sky. I'm going to wait till the temperature's just exactly right. Is that farmer ever going to get any seed in the ground? Is he ever going to reap anything from that crop? So don't try to anticipate the future. We don't know the way the Spirit comes to bones in the womb of a woman with child. Isn't it amazing now that we can actually, we can know with some considerable detail, maybe more graphic detail than some would be comfortable knowing, but we know about how conception works, and we can watch, we can actually observe the growth and development of the child in the womb. We know every detail medically about all of that. We know every detail physically about all of that. But that's not what Solomon says. That's not what the preacher says. It may be possible to know all of that, but you can't know how does that fetus become a living spiritual being. How does the soul, how does the spirit enter into that being? Who knows that? Only God. Only God knows that. It's interesting to me, by the way, that this little sub-theme, especially in chapter 6 through 12, this little sub-theme just kind of runs throughout the book. How much time do we spend worrying about the future? How much time do we spend fretting about the future over which we have very little control at all? And so earlier in the book, the preacher has said to us, if somebody comes to you and tells you, I know what's going to happen in the future, that person is lying. Nobody knows. When somebody tells you, I know what's going to happen in the future, they don't know. But this, I was trying to think of where I first heard this, where I first read this. But a phrase, when I was reading verses 3, 4, and 5, a phrase kept popping into my mind. And this phrase is analysis paralysis. Have you ever heard that expression before? Analysis paralysis. We get so caught up in sitting down, okay, we got to analyze this. We've got to, again, the farmer. We've got to look at the temperature. We've got to look at the amount of moisture in the ground. We've got to look at the clouds and where are the clouds and what kind of clouds are they and what color are they. And we've got to look at the forecast and spend all this time analyzing the data and don't ever just get up and get out and get anything done. I think that's exactly what the preacher's saying here. It's true that life under the sun, from the perspective of under the sun, is dreary. It's vanity. It's a striving after the wind. So what do we do about it? How do we live our lives? Well, get up and get out and do something. Take a risk. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Diversify, and don't spend all your time worrying about the future. How many people even now are sitting at home wringing their hands and fretting and worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen next week? What's going to happen for the next 4 years? What's going to happen for the next decade? We don't have any control over that at all. And so, I didn't put verse 6 on the screen, but look at verse 6. Look what he says in verse 6, which I think is really the conclusion, at least of this part of the admonition from the preacher. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand. For you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Get up and do something. Get up and do something. Again, it's tempting. I think you could take this. I think you could probably just take this slide and make the point that when it comes to spreading the gospel, we sing a song, "Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom? Are you sowing the seed of the kingdom?" We could make that point. How many of us are not sharing the gospel with other people because we're afraid that it will offend somebody? We're afraid that it will hurt somebody's feelings. We're afraid that it will damage a friendship, that it will hurt a relationship. And so we just don't scatter any seed at all. We don't cast our bread upon the waters. We don't give a portion to seven or eight. Now, we analyze personal work to death, don't we? And probably most of us have heard our fill of sermons about personal work programs and personal work techniques and how do we do it and what's the most effective way to do it. And we have gospel meetings where we focus on that, and we have weekend seminars where we focus, and we analyze it to death. And here's what you do, and here's what you don't do, and here's how you do it, and don't do this. And we analyze that, and at the end of the day, we don't get up and get out and do anything. I think that's exactly the kind of point that the preacher's making. We're here. We are stuck here. We're under the sun. So how do we live our lives? Get up and get busy and do something. Get up and get busy and do something, and do what's right. And then verses 7 and 8... be happy. Rejoice. Actually, I shouldn't have said be happy, I guess. Rejoice. Because I think there is a difference between happiness and joy, don't you? And it may be a subtle difference. It may be semantical. But the word happy comes from the same word. It is the same root of the word happen. We're happy depending on what's happening around us. But we are commanded in the Bible to rejoice. Paul says, rejoice always. And again, I say, rejoice. My happiness depends on what's happening around me. My happiness depends on the circumstances in which I find myself. And so we're not really being told to be happy, but we are being told to rejoice. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. How many of you woke up on Thursday morning or Friday morning or yesterday or woke up this morning and you looked out the window and you saw the bright sunshine and you thought, wow, what a great day to pull the blinds and turn off all the lights and spend the day just in a dark room? That's not how it works, is it? Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. You know, does the fact that there is no answer to the important questions of life from the perspective of under the sun, does that mean that we're doomed? Does that mean that we're going to just be depressed and sad all the time? Not at all. Get up and get busy and do something. Do a lot of things. You know, remember that you don't have any control over the future at all. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. Nobody does. Only God does. So get out and do something and enjoy life. However long you live, rejoice in them all. but. And this is what makes the book of Ecclesiastes so challenging. But remember that there will be days of darkness. As a matter of fact, he doesn't just say, remember that there will be days of darkness. He says, remember that the days of darkness will be many. Will be many. Some people approach life. I'm tempted to call this the Joel Osteen method. Some people approach life from the standpoint that it's always light. It's always sunny. We're always in a position where everything is going just like we want it to go. As a matter of fact, people like Osteen will tell you that if you're in a right relationship with God, it must be that way. If you're depressed, that means that there's something wrong with your relationship with God. If you're struggling financially, then there's something wrong with your faith. If you're sick physically, then that means that you've sinned, that there's something wrong with your life. To fix all of that, just get right with God and all your problems will disappear. The Bible doesn't present that message. As a matter of fact, the Bible goes to some pains, to some great lengths, to present a realistic message. And that's especially true in the book of Ecclesiastes. Enjoy life. Get out, get busy, do something. But remember, days of darkness will be many. I've talked about this before. I've talked about this here in the presence of the young people, the college-age people. I've preached before on the subject of death. And how do we deal with death? And how do we approach death? And I've had young people come up to me, and not just teenagers, but young people in their 20s and 30s. Come up to me and say, well, you know, I get what you're saying. I see what the Bible says. But I've never experienced that before. I've never experienced that before. I've talked to young people who are in their 20s who've never been to a funeral. No immediate family member has ever died. They've never had to experience that kind of loss. Never lost a job. Never had to experience any kind of financial difficulty in any way at all. The danger there is thinking that's normal. That's the way it's going to always be. And how incredibly devastating is it when we're not ready for the days of darkness? When we're not prepared for the days of darkness. And again, the preacher doesn't just say the days of darkness are coming. He says the days of darkness will be many. It may be that you've never attended a funeral before. But if you live long enough, you will, and you will attend many funerals, and you will attend many funerals of people with whom you are very closely bonded and attached. You will shed tears over loved ones. You may never have been sick before. You may never have experienced any kind of real pain before. But if you live long enough, you will be sick. You will experience very intense pain. The days of darkness are many. When you get older, you will experience, and we'll talk about that, I think, 2 weeks from today. We'll talk about the preacher's assessment of old age in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, 2 weeks from today. Next Sunday morning, we want to talk about what he specifically says to young people. At the end of chapter 11 and the beginning of chapter 12. But the days of darkness are many. That's the world we live in. That's just the nature of the world we live in. I wish it wasn't so. And I really wish that I could stand up here and tell you with a clear conscience, with an absolutely good conscience, that everything's going to, in this world, under the sun, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right. You'll stop hurting. You will never cry. You will never lose a job. You will never suffer any financial restraints or challenges or difficulties. Nobody will ever be mean to you. Nobody will ever mistreat you. Nobody will ever say an unkind word to you. I wish I could tell you that. We're trying to get to a place, are we not, where all that is true? And we're trying to get to a place where none of those bad things will ever happen because God won't allow them to happen. But that's not where we are now. Now we are under the sun. So how do we live? How do we live? Get out there and do something. Do a lot of somethings. Get out there and live and rejoice. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But be prepared, be ready for dark days. Because dark days are coming. And one of these days, you or someone you love will hear the doctor say, "I'm sorry, but you have cancer." One of these days, you will get the phone call, "I'm sorry, but your parent, your grandparent, your spouse, your child was killed in an accident." One of these days, you will experience all of the things that make life so challenging under the sun. The days of darkness will come, which is why the conclusion of the whole matter is fear God and keep His commandments. If you're looking for ultimate happiness and contentment and joy and peace, I understand, by the way, somebody suggested to me a few weeks ago, "You know, Gary, you're making it sound like you can't be content in this world." I don't mean to be doing that. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4 that he was content. But do you remember how he said it? Do you remember how he said it? He said, "I have learned to be content." I have learned to be contentment was not a natural state of the life in which Paul found himself. In the world in which Paul found himself, contentment was not the natural state. Paul said, "I had to learn it." And what I've learned, Paul said, is to be content in whatever place I find myself. Where was he when he said that? Where was he when he said that? He was in chains, in Rome, in chains, chained between two Roman soldiers, under arrest, not knowing if he had much time left to live in the world. "I have learned to be..." That's exactly what the preacher's telling us here at the end. He's storming the will. He's challenging us. Don't be overcome by life under the sun. Just get out there and do something. Live life. Enjoy the time that you have. Be prepared for the dark days, though. Be ready for the dark days. And he's going to lead us, by the time he gets to the end of this invitation, to the conclusion of the whole matter. The whole duty of man, the English Standard Version says, fear God and keep His commandments. One of the blessings, to me at least, of studying the book of Ecclesiastes is that it presents, a realistic picture of life in this world, of life under the sun. And it admonishes us, it challenges us to want to serve God and please God so that we can live in a place where we don't have to face any of these challenges again. What about you this morning? Is your primary purpose in life fearing God and keeping His commandments? It's not if you're not yet a Christian, but you can change that this morning. You can become a Christian by confessing that you believe Jesus is God's Son and repenting of your sins and being baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. Most of us who are old enough to be accountable to God, mature enough to be accountable to God, most of us have already done that. So, are you living a life that demonstrates that your whole purpose is fearing God and keeping His commandments? If not, make whatever changes you need to make. And if we can help you in any way to respond to God's invitation this morning, won't you please come and let us help you while we stand and sing? We invite you to come.
Bring Christ your broken life. So